If you like YouTube, you'll love YouTube Premium. Hi, I'm Sean Evans from Hot Ones, and I want to tell you about YouTube Premium. It has offline downloads, so you can watch without Wi-Fi. Background play, so you can lock your phone, and it still plays, baby. Oh, and it is completely ad-free. Yes, I said it, ad-free. Try YouTube Premium for 2 months free at youtube.com/premium. Trial eligibility varies. Terms apply. Cancel anytime.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
True Crimers, welcome to Break the Case. I'm your host. I'm Jen Coffendaffer. Can you believe we were up till about midnight last night? For those of you who were able to join the live, Drunk Turkey and I got together and started hammering out some of our thoughts, provoked, of course, by the facts that we know in this case. And we just kept hammering them out. I tell you, it was really, if you didn't get a chance to watch it, it was a very good, robust discussion. Listen, we didn't agree on a lot of things, and we hammered out why we didn't agree, what we thought. I'm actually going to focus in on one, and it's funny, even after the show, we were texting each other, even this morning we were texting, and that's the kind of conversation that law enforcement people have amongst each other, and many of you have amongst each other, right? I feel like so often, particularly in certain cases, the one that, of course, sticks out and is notable to me is the Karen Reed case. It was just a disaster. I always said it was like going into the pig pen because the people in that case were the most low-class level of individuals. They were worse than gangbangers. At least gangbangers, you could talk to them and they actually would have respect for law enforcement in a certain degree when you were alone with them and talking to them in a room, and even outside when you could hear their conversations in consensually recorded calls, as an example, and even over wiretaps, they have a definite reverent or a certain amount of respect for law enforcement. Again, it just is so good to be able to have different discussions and different ideas on different cases without being blasted with insults and then, quite frankly, just lies. So hopefully we were a good example of how two people can have two very different viewpoints on things and be very, very respectful about our comments and about our things and then actually kind of come to some agreement in some ways and keep pondering in lots of other ways. So we're going to discuss four things today to do with the Nancy Guthrie case. So I'm really excited about this. I want to get her back up on stage or get her up on stage. I also want to thank, I want to say this right, let me call her Christy. For becoming a member here. We really, really appreciate it. And thank you so much for being part of our true crime community and our true crime community family. The special things we have coming up for members is we do have some FBI items that I'm going to be doing a drawing from on August 1st. And that will be given out to somebody who is at least a 399 or more member. And it's something really special I think I can do in appreciation for you all for being members. So I just wanted to say that. But let's get straight into the show. I'm not much of a jabberer. So let's first of all talk about the thing I think that's really hit the news. And this is the money that Savannah Guthrie has purportedly spilled out to individuals, let me get this photo up, has purportedly spilled out to individuals regarding her concern over what law enforcement's job has been. Now, you might ask, how did all of this happen? Why has she lost faith in law enforcement? And I would say it started at moment one. Just take a look at this quick clip. And I'm just going to play a little portion of it.
Thought was complete.
Okay, you ready?
After Monday's investigation and really opening access to that property to everyone else, was that something you would do differently looking back, knowing that, you know, federal authorities also conducted a search yesterday? Would you have kept that perimeter up knowing that?
You know, Monday morning quarterback, I probably would have, but I'll say this.
So again, Monday morning quarterback, he can call it whatever he wants to. There's a big difference between Monday morning quarterbacking. In other words, you had a series of options and all of them made some sort of sense if you followed down one direction versus another. But in this situation, this is just the no-brainer situation that you would know you have to keep that crime scene closed. So I don't call this particular thing that virtually everyone in law enforcement has said was a mistake. It was a mistake. And that's not where there's kind of some things. Excuse me, I have to answer this. I'm just going to throw a quick test. Apologies. This is a situation that there was only one answer. Keep the crime scene closed. Anyone with investigative experience knows that you have to do that. All right, let me now show you another quick clip. I'm just going to take a portion of what was said, and I think this was important. This was the
others have asked, can we go? And
this was the first presser. You ready?
Gladly answered those at that time. But it really is about getting our partners out there. To be fair, when we went to that scene the first night, Saturday night.
Did everybody catch that? We've talked about this as just being a faux pas. You know, somehow he said it. He was confused the first night, Saturday night. But I just have to say, it never instills confidence in family members when you get major components like that. And it causes a lot of confusion amongst people. So I'm just kind of pointing out, I'm going to point out one more, just a couple of the indicators very early on and even late. You're not going to believe this one. This just happened within the last few weeks. Here we go.
A call. Take me back to the night of Sunday, January 31st.
Did you hear that? Here we go.
Started with a call. Take me back to the night of Sunday, January 31st.
Okay. This didn't happen on January 31st. You would expect, and this is just like I said a few weeks ago, this is pretty recent. You would expect him to say it wasn't the 31st. Just to let you know, it was the first. You would expect something that he would actually know what date it was that all of this happened. And maybe he does. And again, I'm not coming down on him right now. My purpose is to show you what everybody is asking is, why would Savannah Guthrie get a group of PIs together? Now, I want to talk a lot about this, and I've touched on this already early on when this first happened, because I got to tell you, I'm always hesitant when I hear source information. Drunk Turkey and I talked a little bit about this last night, and the reason is, and I mentioned the telephone game, we've already seen it in this case before, it's too far away. These sources, there's only 24, if you believe what ABC News says, 24, which sounds about right to me, and I guarantee it's not full-time. are working this case at the FBI's Violent Crime Task Force. So you have, in any task force setting, you can have 30, even up to 50 officers and agents. You're not going to have that in Phoenix. It's just not big enough. But expect that you could have a squad of somewhere between 20 and 30. So that's probably why they're saying that squad, about 24 people are working it, including officers from Pima County. Okay. So when you think about this, and you think about the number of people of working this, it's low. And I'm sure she got disgusted. And that's what the articles are coming out and saying. So it started with a podcaster that mentioned this, that she had hired. And then it's gone on now to the New York Post. And several others are saying source information says. So I think when you see it, you know, different newspapers, I'm sorry, different magazines, the Post, newspapers, people online that have a mainstream, not people, but mainstream media, they put their reputations on the line when they say a lot of this. So in any event, I do believe that there is some truth to the rumor that she's hired individuals. Now, that price tag of $500,000, I did a little bit of math. So private eyes, depending on their level of expertise, are going to be anywhere from about $200 to $500 an hour. Now, we don't know what her numbers are. Are there 10 people? They called it a unit. That's what the source was calling it, a unit. Are there 10 people in the unit that are looking into this? Are there more? I mean, did she, you know, hire 10, just say, we're going to average at 300 per hour and say we take 10 for a round number. You can imagine. Yeah, that's per hour, Sherry Lynn. You can imagine. And if you're talking former FBI, you're talking 500 an hour for sure. But 200 to 500 an hour for their services. And we don't know what all services they're providing. In other words, as far as I know, and like I said, these streamers are out there like cucarachas. They are running around looking for any information of, are there searchers in this area? Are people knocking on doors? Are there canvases being done? So nevertheless, when you look at all of that, they're not reporting that. And there really has never been a time frame where the streamers aren't out there. And I do want to caveat it by saying the streamers keep her case in the news, which I think is a positive. A lot of the other shenanigans I've seen are a true negative and quite frankly, an embarrassment. Partying and dressing up like porch guy and, you know, all of that, I just think is in ill taste. But nevertheless, they at least keep a spotlight on it. But my main point here is, where are they talking about it? You know, if they saw a guy going door to door or a couple of guys, gals, or some sort of search effort being done, they would report on that. Absolutely. So we haven't seen that. But nevertheless, this reporting is coming in. I tend to believe it. I remember early on, and I tried to grab this picture, and I know I posted it on my Twitter for sure. There was a gentleman, he was a white male, he was in a truck, he was probably in his 50s or 60s, maybe, and he was trying to get through, you know, a police perimeter, and he said, listen, you know, I'm working for the Guthries, words to that effect, and they let him through. So I remember, and sorry, was he in a Tesla? It might have been a white Tesla. It was definitely a white vehicle. Let me just caveat myself. Somebody in chat says a Tesla. You might be right. I can sort of just picture the white, and I can picture him in there. And I agree very early on, but that's one person. That's one person. But you can imagine over 100 days, everyone. We don't know when they would have been hired, but I can tell you he was hired weeks ago, really just a couple of weeks, if that, after the abduction took place. So that alone, somebody working on this case 100 days, and again, she's not hiring people to take Saturday and Sunday off. You wonder why these individuals get paid so much. They get paid a lot of money because, first of all, they bring 20, sometimes 30, 40 years of experience in these matters, right? So they bring a lot of experience. And until you've done cases over and over and over again, you can't learn because you haven't made the mistake. And that's, of course, in any occupation. Each case you have, everything that happens, you learn more and more. So in any event, they bring that. So they've already made a lot of mistakes so they can more quickly not make those mistakes again and get down to business. They also, like I said, they work around the clock. They're going to work nights. They're going to work weekends. They're going to be on the beck and call of the people who hire them. That's how it works. And some might have very specific expertise, such as expertise concerning the digital side of this. So in other words, who in the world sent the ransom notes, the two ransom notes that were sent to three different locations? Who sent those notes? And I shouldn't call them notes. They were email type communications into servers at media locations. Who sent those? Could she have hired investigators with that sort of a background to look into that? Could she have hired individuals that are investigators, but in the area of Bitcoin investigation to try to figure out who opened up that account? So I just want to say, when you're talking about PIs and investigators, it's not necessarily individuals who are riding around a neighborhood and knocking on doors. This could be something that she's concentrating on the cyber realm. You obviously want to have one point, one head person that's calling the shots. But it can get very expensive. As I said, just add it up. Just take $300 an hour times 8 hours, 2,400 a day. Take that times 10. And then did I do that math right? That was quick in my head. You add up really quick. So a $500,000 does not at all surprise me, knowing how much experts and how much PIs that are really good and have great reputations and have the bona fides behind them to get hired. It doesn't remind me at all. So in other words, this amount, I think, could be, or this amount could be very plausible to me. And I can only imagine how frustrated she is. She has the full breadth of the FBI that's been on this since day four. She has all of the Pima County and other law enforcement officers, this task force that's been on it. I think it got moved over after a couple of months, as I recall. And she's frustrated. I am not at all surprised. I always tell people, please hire private consultants after a certain amount of time goes by. I mean, if you're not getting any answers after 30 to 60 days, you've got to hire your own people. And again, we all know, and it's so true, it's not the first 48 hours, but certainly the first 72. I would argue the first 24 is what's critical. First 48, still critical. First 72, if you get beyond that, you've gone out of critical realm. You've gone into, this is going to be really tough realm. Remember, over about a $500,000 plus people go missing every year. 90% of those cases are solved pretty much post-haste within the first 72 hours. So when Nancy Guthrie isn't found in that time frame, the ransom again was not paid. Likely the Bureau said, without proof of life, I don't recommend you pay it. Obviously, these family members can do anything they want to do. The Bureau is there to provide their expertise in terms of what they would recommend. They're going to make recommendations, but they're going to fully say, family, all of this is up to you. Believe it or not, that's how it works. I talked a little bit, I touched on that a very dear friend of mine, we were agents together, just got off of one of these cases. In other words, it was an older person. It was almost identical, just a different place. Older person kidnapped for ransom. He and a hostage negotiator and others worked to coordinate the payment. The payment was made and the person was returned. There's been $183 million in cryptocurrency paid to ransom to people who kidnap And that was just in 2024, $1.2 billion in 23. And I read, I believe, over $800 million in 2025. This happens, and cryptocurrency is what they're going for. So I just want to make it so clear that this is not some sort of, you know, oddity. What happened to her reminds me, and I know clear back in March, I've been talking about this wrench attack, more organized. Porch guy being the mope. But just because you're a mope doesn't mean you're a complete idiot. Look, he didn't get caught. I think he accidentally killed her. I think he was way too rough with her. We know that because she had internal damage. That's why she was expiring blood on the porch. You know, it's really, really terrible. But I can only imagine her frustration because from what we know, the PIs, $500,000 PIs, again, that money doesn't go very far. Especially now that we're into well over, I think we're on day 117, 118, and it's just going to keep that cash register is just going to keep ringing up, and they're not getting to anywhere. When you have the full breadth of the FBI working a case and they're not getting anywhere with their labs, with their huge resource base, with their ability to look at visual evidence, and they can't get anywhere. I'm just wondering, you know, if this is me, for my own peace of mind, I probably hire a couple of subject matter experts to get down to how those communications were made, and a subject matter expert on the Bitcoin. I probably wouldn't have anybody out there. I personally, for me, this is, if I were Savannah Guthrie, I would call personally the Madres Buscadoras. I would talk to the Cajun Navy. I would talk to any search group, EcuSearch, and I would say, I want you out there. But I got to tell you, these are the rules. You have to have the Pima County Sheriff on board. And if I were Savannah Guthrie, and she puts out statements every now and again on IG, I would say, hey, everybody, I just wanted you to know, I have personally contacted these folks, personally contacted them, these organizations. I want a search done in the Sonoran Desert. I've asked for that. I believe if she's looked at it, the 40-page report from the Cajun Navy and what they're going to bring, and I would do it. That's what I would do. And then that way, now it's all out there. It's all out there for the public to see. And the Pima County Sheriff just really doesn't need any more heat. They just really don't. So I just wanted to say that I understand what she's doing. If she truly has a unit and she's paying this kind of money, this is just going to keep, that bill's going to keep racking up. And I don't think they're going to make any headway. I wish she would just get these private search groups that aren't going to cost any money, by the way. And they want to do this. This is great experience for them. They think they can help. I would get them all out there in that desert area because I know we're at 118 days. And really within a week, that the body and everything else would have been strewn all over the place. Wildlife, it would have been very difficult. But nevertheless, that's what I would do. That would be my action to take. And I would let go these other PIs, because for her to have $100,000 or $500,000, I love this. Thank you, Karen. For her to have a $500,000 price tag is really terrible. I feel bad for her. I know she has the money, but where does it stop? So hopefully she will get better advice. She needs to change the billboards. She needs to have Porch Guy's face put up on it, and they need to be in Spanish. This is a no-brainer. And I would submit one of the biggest tactical errors that the FBI and the Pima County Sheriff's Office made. There's not one report of one of Porch Guy anywhere around Tucson. That's pretty pathetic. Really is. But that's up to them. They can do what they want to do. So in any event, you know, that's the case. I'm staring over a chat a little bit, and I see that there's something going on with somebody being a chat. Everybody knows, and when I say everybody, not only my followers, but for sure my mods know, I am a big proponent of freedom of speech, and I love different thoughts, different people to be able to come in and to voice their concerns, to voice things that they oppose. And so I'm a huge proponent of that. Where we shut people down is only, you know, when you have.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Naysayers coming in and calling people names. You know, we're not going to put up with a kindergarten chat because it's distracting to people who actually want to ask real questions and who want to really dive into the case. It's almost like having a nasty porn commercial come up while you're watching a great movie. So we're going to keep it on a great movie. And as long as folks aren't calling anyone names or being disrespectful in a name calling type way, you know, their comments will stay up. And my mods know the rules with that. I'm pretty darn lenient. But we have such a great group that normally we don't have these issues. But back to what's more important is Savannah and her decision. And yes, I totally agree. There is a desperation here. And it's really sad. And I hopefully gave you some examples of why I think very early on that Savannah might have started losing her confidence. And of course, Sheriff Nanos himself said they are not communicating, that the FBI is communicating with the Guthrie family. That's almost unheard of, except in cases where you have families that are constantly bothering the law enforcement, wanting to know what's going on, what's going on, what's going on. And sometimes that can be a cause for less communication. But my belief is the reason this would be happening is because the Guthries want to speak with the FBI directly and want to have that sort of line of communication, and they don't want to be communicating with Sheriff Nanos. But it was Sheriff Nanos saying that. So that tells me that it likely happened. I mean, that's only something negative about Sheriff Nanos. And so there's absolutely no way that he's going to tell on himself in this way. It's too negative. So I believe it. All right. Let's talk about a couple more things that have come up recently. I have three more action items, we call them. All right. One is the pajama top. This is a picture that I grabbed of the purported pajama top. Okay. Couple of things on this. First of all, how did this even start? Okay. I've talked about the streamers out there, and these streamers are doing anything to gin up likes, clicks, views. I get it. Look, they make their living off of being out in front of people's houses and stirring up information. Okay. They need to do that. And other than that, how are they going to keep everybody's interest when there's really nothing to report? There's nothing to report. So how are they going to drum this up? And so this particular streamer is 30 minutes, by the way, away from Nancy's house is where this is discovered. 30 minutes, folks. In a totally different county, right? He's got, and then he gets some people out there. Listen, there are homeless people. There are migrants. There are so many reasons. I ask each of you, and I don't know where you live, but I promise you, I can go 30 minutes from my house and find this sort of articles everywhere. I can go less than 30 minutes. I can actually go 10 minutes and find stuff you wouldn't believe, because there are encampments, there are, you know, people leaving clothing behind like this. I don't even know. Well, I do know because I saw who called it a pajama top to begin with. I don't know if you want to call this a pajama top. 30 minutes away, it's just not significant. I'm not going to spend much more time on it. All I'm going to say is consider the source, consider the information, how far it is away. And again, I'll caveat this by saying streamers bring focus on cases and help them not to die. I'll call your attention to a case that will forever haunt me, how that case ended. And that is the Sebastian Rogers case. And now, since the spokesperson for Sebastian Rogers on the part of the father is deceased with a horrible heart attack that happened in the early mornings a couple of weeks ago. That case is just dead on the vine. Anyway, and nobody's in front of the Proudfoot home anymore. Nobody has kept that case alive. No one. And so the streamers provide a narrative to keep information going. And I truly appreciate that. They actually spend a lot of time, a lot of hard work hours. But caveat anything you hear from them as consider the source. I mean, consider the fact, as an example, that one of the streamers out there has said whenever he has a case and he needs to have somebody be accused as being a suspect, he literally said he creates accounts. I think he used the number 10, but maybe he just said accounts, multiple accounts, and he makes them look like news. You know, he names up things like Action 10 News or News R Us. And then he says, and this is his words, not mine, you know, that he can convince his people that this is actual news by spinning it up. And then all of a sudden people believe it as news. This is kind of one of those things. To law enforcement's credit, they went out there, they collected it. And so, you know, I appreciate that. That they went out there. I see some people commenting about this isn't, you know, that Sebastian's case is over and keeping the case out there. And I do want to caveat that there are many channels still that will talk about Sebastian Rogers, but I'm talking about streamers being out there. I'm talking about it being in mainstream media. I'm talking about it being on a large scale in social media. And that is just completely died out. So I don't want that to happen to the Nancy Guthrie case. And I always am astonished that every time I go to do a live, there's so much to talk about. You know, I don't find it as being nothing we're talking about. I mean, there's a lot to talk about. So anyway, this was the big news. All I have to say is when you see this, I think you, you know, take it for what it's worth. You guys are really bright, intelligent people. I want to talk about next about left-handedness versus right-handedness of Porch Guy. And I will say, Daniel, Drunk Turkey, and I had a very robust conversation about that because he is of the opinion that Porch Guy is a lefty, and I'm of the opinion that Porch Guy is a righty. And so let me go over just a little bit of what we're looking at to be able to kind of make some of these assessments. All right. So let's look at the original video. Let me make sure I got that from the very beginning. Here we go. So watch as he comes up. All right. So one of the things that could be construed, I think, is somebody having being left-handed is, do you see him kind of, all he does is he relaxes his hand on his gun. Okay. His left hand. Now, I don't think he's grabbing it. I think he's just kind of placing his hand on his gun, because for me, he's taking his dominant hand and he's doing the action with it. Obviously, anyone who carries a gun, you have to, or even if you're not trained, you're going to have some interplay with your left and right hand, right? Our left hand, it's not that you just keep it down at your side or your offhand. Either way, your dominant and your non-dominant hand interplay all the time. But to determine handedness, you look at what do they dominantly use. In my opinion, and I want you to all, you know, obviously make your own conclusions, but I watch how he uses his right hand to do the action. And to me, his left hand is just resting. So watch. Okay, now we had another part of this conversation was what was down here. So we know the camera is up here where his right hand is. We know this left hand is reaching well below it. I want to show you a picture of the door. So you see he's got his right hand up at the camera. You see the mount there, the mount that was left behind. He has his right hand at the mount, and then you can see well below the camera where the mount is and where his hand is up, like right here, right at the camera, below that by many inches. Take a look, putting this back up, by many inches. In fact, you could say probably 8 inches to a foot. You can see, let me stop it right there and go back a little bit, that's pretty low. Okay, it's not at the level of the camera, in my opinion, the left hand. You can see the top part of the camera. It's like me putting my hand here, and see how low my hand is right here? Yes, it can be visually seen by the camera, my left hand, but it's well below the actual lens of the camera. So I don't believe he was using his hand to yank the camera. This is just my view. I think the camera is higher than that. And I make that judgment based on this photo where that camera sat, his hand where it sat, and then the left hand being far lower. Is it possible that he could be kind of pulling at that bottom part? It's possible of that camera, but I just see that as much lower. In fact, initially, I thought he was grabbing at the doorknob initially, but I'm not so sure he's even doing that. I'm not so sure that it's that much lower. But anyway, I want to show you again this. I'm going to start it all over. I want you to make your own assessments. I believe that left hand, the offhand, is resting there. He uses his right hand to dominate the action. He takes his left hand. I don't think that's on the camera, but I'm not sure what exactly he's doing. He could have even been grabbing that screened-in area. Let's take a look at that, you know, that screen in some way. To me, this is probably more likely near that doorknob area, but I'm not 100% sure he moved it in that action. All I could tell you is it seems to be lower than the camera. But it is possible, you know, you can see it for yourself. I just think that view is too low. Okay. Now, what does he do after? Okay, watch this. Whoops, stop. Okay. Oops, let me go back just a little bit. After this, of course, there's something that happens where he's in this process. He's trying to cover the lens. It's easy to cover the lens with this. You can imagine, and I should have some IV here to show you. But the IV isn't necessarily going to cover you. I truly believe this is just my assessment. See how he almost like he almost tests the door. He turns around and he lurks back toward, almost like he doesn't know what he's going to do. And then he says, oh, I'll grab this. He uses both hands. Did you see that? He uses both hands and he ultimately pulls, I think, with the left hand where he actually grabs it. So he reaches kind of with both. He has it in his left hand. Now, if you're going to do an action, you want the left hand would be the action that you would want to hold something up, I think. So nevertheless, let's just watch. Oh, sorry. Started all over again. One more time. To me, the dominant hand, it's doing the action. The left hand maybe reaches down to pull at that door. I don't think it's pulling at the camera because the camera is so elevated. I showed you that picture to show you. He lurks over. He reaches down with both hands. Watch them both go down. He ultimately grabs the ivy with the left hand. Okay, then that one ends. Let me pick up here then. Okay. Then he's here. And it appears to me he has it in his left hand. And then we can't see. He initially has it in his left hand, and then we honestly can't see. But I've talked about before that I really believe he used that foliage for a very specific purpose. I think because he had never practiced yanking a ring camera. Thank you so much, Witch Hazel. I love that handle too. Because he had never practiced and he had these gloves that were just enormous for his hands, as all of us can see. I think that he couldn't get the proper grip when he first went up. I think he thought it would be easy. And I think he used that foliage as a forceful way to grab it. Now, why do I say that? And I actually have another picture. But if you zoom in on this and see if my partner, Daniel Drunk Turkey, he can zoom in. I need to figure out how to do that. But if you zoom in there, you can see this ivy matter that is literally lodged in that holder. It's lodged in the holder. So just say this is the holder. You can, right here on the side, up top, you can see where it hits the doorframe. The ivy is literally lodged in there. JLR wants to become a member. I don't know if this is really JLR because it says JLL dot period investigates, but I appreciate it, JLR, if this is you. All right. Anyway, I don't even know if that's who that is, but anyway, thank you. I appreciate all members. Nevertheless, you can see that it's stuck in there. Why is it stuck in there? Because it wasn't just used to wave as some sort of sign or some sort of ruse or anything like that. It was forcefully used. It's in there. I have this great picture that shows the gray matter sticking out of that edge. That tells me he used that, I think, to grip, because for whatever reason, maybe it's because what he has under, maybe it's because of the oversized of the glove that he couldn't get the correct grip. So I think he went up like this and just used that ivy to get at and then pulled it out. And again, part of the reason I say that is because we can see him do it, right? Let's go down here and watch this. We can see it. He's not just waving it around. And I think he ends up utilizing both hands to grab that because it's screwed in. For those of you who have Nesta ring cameras, please look. I can tell you mine would take so much force to grab a hold of and grab out. So I really, truly believe that was the purpose of that. And again, getting back to, and I want to bring up something else on Porch Guy. First of all, why were Turkey and I even discussing this, right? Why were we even discussing it? We were discussing it because it's going to be important if and when they make an arrest. Okay. It's important because if you make an arrest and somebody ends up being left-handed, it's not going to fit the narrative if he was truly right-handed or their evidence. I shouldn't say a narrative, their evidence. So I truly believe that it will come into play and it will be important. Also, just the fact that you want to know in terms of the suspect you're looking for, is he right or left-handed? Now, you can't just discount that he's not ambidextrous. My husband is ambidextrous. He can do things with both hands. It's amazing. And both of my kids are lefties, but they can do things with their right hands too. Pretty much ambidextrous. I wish I would have gotten that trait. I'm so far right-handed. It's crazy. Can't do anything well with my left hand. But I want you to tell or to show you the strongest piece of evidence here, guys. Let me stop it back just a little bit, folks. See right here? Look at the gun. The gun is seated in the middle, right here in the crotch area. The handle to the gun is facing to the right hand. There's almost no way. And I actually was going to do it with one of my, I have a bunch of Sims guns that I use for training. I was going to show you how difficult it would be to maneuver a gun that is facing with the grip toward the right hand, to maneuver that and grab it with the left hand. And grab it with the left hand like that. It would be very difficult. So this is one of my strongest points of belief, that this is a right-handed perpetrator, not a left-handed perpetrator. But again, I appreciate and respect all points of views, and I change my mind on different things based on really listening to a lot of things. As an example, the blood on the porch, I initially was not 100% convinced that there was expirated blood. If you watch my lives, and if you look, there's a puddle, and I don't have this picture in my library today, but there's that kind of grouping of blood. And my belief, also Dale Lumberg, who I have a lot of respect for, homicide detective for over a decade with the Dallas Police Department and robberies and kidnappings prior to that, he and I both believe that was from stopping in a particular spot and lots of blood that was bleeding right there. And when it pulsates out, and I've shown pictures on my lives before, it makes little teeny spatter. So, but what convinced me was if you look away from the area everybody wants to concentrate on, and I found this great picture further away, I see those little bitty expirated blood drops. Actually, let me just put it up here so I can show you what I'm talking about. And that is why I am truly convinced it was expirated blood. And I'm sorry, I tell you, Drunk Turkey, he can maneuver his pictures in seconds. There's no clicking noise, so apologize for my clicking noise. I've actually heard it on a live, and it doesn't really bother me that much. I thought it was going to be really loud. It's not that loud. But again, apologies for anybody that's bothering. Let me get this because it's almost right up here. And then we're going to move on to the last point of the live. We're going to get to it. Let me find it because it's really important. I know it's coming up here. I did a live on this a while ago. Oh, here it is. This is the one I want. I want you to look really closely at this photo. Again, it's up and to the right, that the one everybody likes to talk about it. But that's not the one I want to talk about. It's this one, because do you see these little bitty spatters? That would not be occur with just one drop going down. You know, it wouldn't occur with just one drop going down. So these little spatters show me there was expirated blood.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
That's why I'm convinced. So again, I was just concentrating. First of all, I didn't have a very good picture I was looking at, and I was concentrating on that grouping that so many people look at. Don't look at that. Look off of that. And it's clear it's expirated blood. So as evidence comes, as you reevaluate evidence, that's what you have to do. And sometimes your mind will change with things. Anyway, I just wanted to bring up one of the areas where my mind was convinced. I wasn't sure before. I didn't think it was, but now I'm pretty much convinced. But again, it's kind of a moot point for all of us because the experts know, the blood spatter experts know right away, the scientists, because all they're going to do, if I pray that they grabbed it, but they should have been able to get examples to see if there was mucus. And if there was mucus, obviously it's expirated blood. All right. Finally, I want to talk about, I think we talked about all this. I finally want to talk about, is Porch Guy dead? Is Porch Guy dead? So I want to talk about that a little bit. Look, I brought that up so long ago as a possibility as to why nobody's come forward about him. And when you look at that, these are the scenarios. So just for you to think about, is Porch Guy dead? Number one, if this is a wrench attack, and I keep talking about wrench attack more because that's where, to me, the evidence is going. So my needle is pushing that way. If this is a wrench attack, in other words, something that's more organized up above, and I want to say the main reason was the minute they came out and said that those two ransom notes sent to three different media sources were real, meaning sent by the abductors, that changed the whole game plan for me. Because now there's a level of expertise that you don't normally see, right? How could they know that if they sent, that they couldn't be traced? At least so far, they haven't been able to trace them. How could they know that? Believe me, I'm still deep diving as I have the time, which time is so difficult to manage. But as I have the time, I'm looking at wrench cases. There's so many of them, and many of them are privatized. But I'm searching hard for a wrench case where the media was used and where a person died. So most of the time in these wrench cases, you don't have the people die. So you have a bargaining chip, and you have these families that will pay. So I'm looking for that. I mean, I think that whoever did this, they were pretty, pretty bright, knowing they didn't want to get caught. Again, because I see something in here, wrench attack, I'm going to explain it really easily. First of all, they called a wrench attack after a cartoon where somebody was beating somebody with a wrench to try to get something out of them. So that's the reason that wrench attack stuck. So just imagine a wrench. Nothing more complicated than that on that piece. It's literally where individuals, because you cannot get into programs to get people's bank accounts with Bitcoin and with crypto, it's very, very difficult to get in. And so the answer to that was, well, listen, we have to have a key, the key code, the numbers to get in that have to be typed in. to withdraw money. And how can we get that? We can beat it out of the people with the code. That's the simple explanation. You beat it out of the people with the code, or you kidnap the people related to the people with the code, and you use them as a barter to get into a cryptocurrency account. Now, I will say this. I have no proof one way or the other, that, and I wish I did, and I ask our Bitcoin expert, you know, I will pay. What can I do to get information related to whether Savannah Guthrie and her husband have Bitcoin or cryptocurrency? And he said, you can't. There's just no way to find out if they have it, because it's private. I mean, the only way you'd be able to find it is if you could get their tax returns, as an example, because you have to claim any income and growth and things like that. If you pulled any out, they would likely know in that way, the IRS, and we're not getting anything from the IRS. But I guarantee law enforcement knows. And if law enforcement believes, or if they had Bitcoin, she's worth over $45 million, everyone. Savannah and her husband together. $45 million. You have investors. You have people saying, and I'm telling you, Bitcoin, all you have to do is listen to one of the two sessions. He says, listen, he gives his nephews and nieces, I think, 25 in Bitcoin. He says it's going to be worth so much 10 years from now. And I believe him. If you can use it now at Home Depot and all sorts of different retailers, it's sort of like saying, you know, 50 years ago when my parents said, oh my gosh, nobody's going to use plastic to pay for things. Nobody's going to use this credit card thing. There's no chance. They're not going to trace it because the government can trace us and they have all of our information. Nobody's going to go for that. Look at where we're at. You can't do anything without either your credit card, ATM card. I don't carry one of those, which I need to probably start, but I don't. I just do cash. But nevertheless, that's what everybody's doing. And now we're doing it cyber, you know, using Zelle, PayPal, Venmo, all these other items. That can be hacked, by the way, everyone. I always tell everybody, if you're going to do it, you need to use Zelle, because Zelle is bank to bank. There's no middleman. PayPal, the others can be hacked. There's middlemen in there. Obviously, it's PayPal. It's not Wells Fargo or Bank of America. So I always tell everybody, please just sign up for Zelle. Almost every bank has it, and you can go this way. So my point is, I believe this Bitcoin expert. I believe his foresight that Bitcoin is here to stay. And it's here because it's, you can't compromise it. Can't compromise it. So it's here. And that's why these ransom people love it. Because you can't compromise it. So, nevertheless, let's get back to the question at hand. And the question at hand is, would, if this is a wrench attack, would the people who hired Porch Guy, and probably if it's like a big, a normal wrench attack, would give him seed money? Here's a couple of $1,000s. And by the way, how come nobody, if that happened, how come that can't be traced? You know, here's your money. How come that can't be traced? How did they do that? But typically what they do in these attacks is they give you seed money, you know, because you need money to travel. You need money for your time. You need money for your costume, your outfit. What are you going to wear? What's your plan? You need all of that. In the one that happened the day before Nancy Guthrie's abduction, that happened only an hour or so away in Scottsdale, in that one, they had seed money and they bought FedEx uniforms and knocked on the door, and that's how they made their way in. And they brutally attacked that couple. It was foiled though, because they're idiots and they didn't clear the house. So there was somebody in the house that called the police. The police arrived. They get on a high-speed chase. They end up being cornered in a mall parking lot, and they're arrested. And these two knuckleheads didn't even know one another. Again, I think they're going to have been found likely on the dark web by a wrench organization. This one mimics a lot of these types of aspects. That's why I keep going back to it. For instance, the fact that they can't trace, the fact that they wanted cryptocurrency, the fact that they had a cryptocurrency account, the fact that the full breadth of the FBI of $500,000 paid to PIs and law enforcement cannot figure any of this out. All right. But this is why I don't think if it's a cryptocurrency, they would have killed Porch Guy. That's the question on the table right now. Is Porch Guy dead? A cryptocurrency guy would not kill Porch Guy. I don't believe. And because they keep themselves so separated. They use apps like Signal and other apps that keep their identity withheld from the person. They're just really cyber controlled. They communicate. They tell them what to do. They give them the information about somebody like a Nancy. Hey, she lives by herself. Easy to get into. Her daughter is Savannah Guthrie. They're worth millions. You know, kidnapper, take her, and then we're going to use her as a pawn to get the numbers. And then she dies because Porch Guy can't keep her alive because he handles her too rough. She does not expirate blood unless she has internal injuries. That's just a fact. So handled very roughly, whether purposefully a blow was hit or whether just him handling her. So, you know, there's that. I just saw up here that somebody referenced Dr. Gary Bricado. You know, I talk to Gary all the time. We communicate regularly. I haven't talked to him for probably a week or so, but we haven't had a large discussion about this, but I just disagree with him. I totally disagree with him because I don't know where their stats are from. But we talked about it. We laughed. We said we disagree on this case. He thinks it's staged. He thinks it's fake. He thinks all of this is fake. He thinks that this was scripted, staged. They always on that show that he is on, they intimate that the family's involved. They do. I mean, I don't get to watch much of it, but I don't watch it. I'm just going to be honest. But people send me clips for me to take a look at what's being said. And so I'll look and I'll watch a 30-second clip. I don't agree, but that doesn't mean that they're right or not right. You know, maybe this whole thing is staged, the family's involved, this is all Tommaso's doing. They're doing this elaborate scheme. I don't believe it. The evidence doesn't show me that. That does not comport with my investigative background. Occam's razor, the simplest solution almost always is the solution. So, I agree on the blood thinners, that the blood thinners, but again, when you see how far out this goes, to me, this is expirated. You know, that's just my belief that it's expirated blood. You know what? I'm going to work on getting those exact numbers if I can. The problem with wrench attacks is a lot of times the individuals just pay. But it happens so often. I told you, my friend, who's a retired FBI agent, was just on one last week. They didn't demand crypto, so I guess you couldn't call it an exact crypto or an exact attack because of crypto. I'm just saying, this one is crypto, and It's a kidnapping for ransom. That's my belief. At the core, I believe it's a kidnapping for ransom. Can we add in that other factor that it is a wrench attack, meaning they wanted crypto? I'm just going by the notes. Bitcoin. That's what they wanted. Nevertheless, it's huge. I promise you, it is huge, these types of attacks. There's not two a year, but I don't know where he's pulling his stats from. I have the utmost respect for Dr. Bricado. Like I said, we've been friends for years. Utmost respect, but we disagree on this. And we were laughing. He said, we disagree. And I said, I know we disagree. We're good. And we're both good. So anyway, I want to pull up this Karen Caldwell. When you take out Nano's family and streamer noise, this case has a great deal of evidence that we normally wouldn't be privy to. I agree. And that's why I try to break it down on the show and show you what evidence we have. It really does. The problem is, you're right, all of this noise gets in the way of really analyzing the case. But of course, I want to keep everybody updated on anything that happens, because if not, I have people DMing me saying, wait a minute, did you hear about this? Or did you, which I love, keep doing that. But nevertheless, I'd like to keep everybody updated on anything that happens and then try to find a fact that supports. Again, with Savannah Guthrie, and I pointed this out, I did a short last night. We don't have any proof Savannah hired anybody. I don't have any bills. I don't have her saying it. I don't have any proof of anybody wandering around since about 2 weeks after it happened. And that was one individual man who I thought was more for security. We have zero proof. Zero proof. But we have a source that a couple of channels are reporting on, or one channel and then some outlets are reporting on. So, it could be true. I would say part of it's true. Not all of it, but I would say part of it, because that's usually how it goes with the telephone game. Jen, thank you for emphasizing the facts. This case will be solved with facts. I have enormous respect for you. Huge gratitude. Thank you, Christine. We love you on the channel. Thank you so much for the donation. I really appreciate it. We're a fact-based channel. That doesn't mean we're not going to talk about other things. We're also going to have some fun on the channel. It's hard when we have such serious topics, but I say when you lose your sense of humor in these cases, you're just in big trouble. Sometimes people quip about different cases, and there's some clever quips, as long as it's not derogatory or painful for the family. I think it's always good to, on these channels, as we discuss different things, try to find a way to have a smile. All right. So I don't think a wrench attacker would kill Porch Guy. There's no reason to, because they're protected through how they message each other and how they communicate. Okay. Number two, would just say, as again, some channels are promoting, that it's the family. All right, the family is behind this. The family staged this whole thing. They hired somebody to be Porch Guy. It's all about having Nancy dead so they can, I guess, take ownership of the house and whatever paltry amount she has from her pension, that's the reasoning. Anyway, I've talked a lot about that. When you are the caregiver, you have so many opportunities. Just one flake of fentanyl in one of her pills would have killed her. Just one little, like a grain of salt. So, and they would never test for something like that. You have to test for these things. Maybe fentanyl they might have, but you could use arsenic. There's so much that, and that's if they would have even done, they would have paid for an autopsy, which they probably wouldn't have, because they would have thought, oh, failure, heart failure, right? So, but there's some people who still believe the family's involved and they staged this whole thing. I'm never going to believe that. unless somehow it comes to fruition. And, you know, the family, in a nutshell, has been cleared. And I know, I wanted to talk about this real briefly. A lot of people say, Jen, some people disagree with you in law enforcement, former FBI, they named who they were. I disagree. And I think a lot of it, and I say this all the time, it comes down to your different background in the FBI. Are you talking to people, or are you listening to people that were embedded in a task force setting with local law enforcement that worked violent crime and joint cases? Not in the FBI space where they came to you, but where cases have primary venue with the local jurisdiction. That's my background. The primary jurisdiction begins in local law enforcement. That's this case right here. The venue squarely lies within Pima County. It doesn't lie right now at the federal level unless they prove he crossed international or state lines, which could have happened. And unless, or international or state lines. So that being said, I've worked the cases where the primary venue, 13 of them, was at the state level. And then you work with the Bureau, who's going to take it over, who's going to prosecute. And every one of those, the Bureau prosecuted it. And in every one of those, no statements were made. We even did big things up on the stage, right? You know, dog and pony shows, I called them. No statements like that would be made in a vacuum. You work together. So sometimes it's people's experience that they haven't been in those situations. They haven't been where they're working cases that the primary venue is local. It starts with the locals and then it could go over to federal. That's my background. And I can tell you, you're not going to make a statement like clearing the whole family if that's not the case. So back to the question at hand, is Porch Guy dead? So if it is the family, I totally say that they are cleared, but I'm just saying, because a lot of people are saying they're not, you're telling me the family now is going to now go out and kill Porch Guy? So you're setting up this whole scheme, and then on top of it, oh yeah, we're going to kill Porch Guy? Come on. So that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Now, what about if this is the lone wolf? And, you know, I told you Mac is one of my favorites. Cheryl McCollum, I really like her. She's so grounded. She works a million cases. I really believe in her. And I just want to say that she says that she thinks this is a lone wolf. This is a lone wackadoodle. Lone wackadoodle. So if it's a lone wackadoodle, you're telling me the lone wackadoodle killed himself? It's possible. He could. There are some that do that. There are some that do that. But I just want to say, to me, even though I know I brought it up a long time ago as a possibility because nothing is ruled out, I don't think it is very probable at all that Porch Guy is dead. I think he's a loner. And I think he did this for the thrill, for the money. And I really do think that there's somebody else pulling the puppet strings with this. All right, everyone. I appreciate your time. We've gone way over our hour. You guys are so incredible. Thank you for being here. Thank you to the mods. Thanks for all the new members. I really appreciate you. Until next time, everyone, and let me get her beautiful face up here. May justice be served for Nancy Guthrie and for all of those who are missing.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.